Welcome to Live and Love Your Brand, a podcast to support you in sharing your message and mission with the world. I'm your host, Emma Lovell. I'm lovely by name, lovely by nature. I'm a personal branding specialist with a mission to support female entrepreneurs to live and love their brand. I've been running my business, Lovely Communications, for more than 12 years, and I can hand on heart say that my success has come from the strength of my personal brand. I believe in the power of owning and sharing our story. I want to help you own your story, shop consistently, and really put yourself out there. So here on the podcast, you'll find helpful tips, practical exercises, and joyful discussions that will inspire you to reconnect with your brand and communicate it more effectively. I'll be joined by incredible experts to discuss how personal branding can have a huge impact on your business and on your life. I'd love to hear from you, so please make sure to connect over on social media. You can find me on Instagram, at Lovely Comms, that's L-O-V-E-L-L-Y, double the L means double the life. Facebook, Lovely Communications, and you can join in the conversation in our lovely community, the Live and Love Your Brand Facebook group. Of course, make sure to come back weekly as each new episode drops. I can't wait to share with you how to gain clarity, build confidence, and increase connections, all by sharing your unique personal brand with the world. Lovely Communications is based on the Gold Coast and recognises Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples as the first peoples of this place, now known as Australia. We are grateful for the continuing care of the lands, waterways and skies where we work, live, listen, learn and play. From here on Yugambeh country and from wherever you are listening, we respect the elders past, present and emerging. Hello and welcome today to our episode with Rashida Tayabali. Rashida is a brilliant copywriter for women in business, and we've connected through writing groups. My background is writing. I love my writing people. We could have chatted for hours. We did off air for a little while because that's kind of my home place. But Rashida has such a beautiful view of writing and wonderful way with words. But I also love her approach to bringing diversity to her clients' world. And she really made me think a lot in this episode about the diversity within my world and how I'm approaching that with my clients and how I'm speaking to my audience to show them that I have diversity, welcome diversity, and love working with many people from many different backgrounds. So Rashida is a copywriter for female entrepreneurs. She loves articulating the heart and soul of people's business, using the right words to connect and convert clients. Words are her passion, and she's passionate about using those words to grow their business. She says the best scent in the world for her is the scent of new books, and she's often found trawling the bookstores and sniffing the pages. I would love to see that, Rashida. So please join us for this thoughtful conversation, thought-provoking, thoughtful conversation with brilliant writer and businesswoman, Rashida Tayabali. Welcome to the podcast, Rashida Tayabali.
Hi, Emma. Thank you. I'm really happy to be here and finally getting that chat with you.
I know, it's been a long time coming. I think I sort of flagged the idea last year, and then we're here now, so I'm really happy with that. But let's kick off with the easy question of who are you?
Okay, so my name is Rashida Tayabali, made in Kenya, living in Australia, and I'm a copywriter for female-led businesses. I provide crystal clear messages to women in business to help them build their dream business or brand.
I love it. And I saw you speaking. I mean, we've been both in communities. We've been in Rachel's List and other things for a long time. So I knew of you. And then I got to see you speak at Kate Toon's conference, which was so wonderful, and to actually get to see you in person and give you a hug. And you were brilliant. But tell me, you are a writer. So how did you get started?
Okay, so it's a very long story and I try and keep it concise. So I have a marketing and management double degree from Edith Cowan University in Perth, Western Australia. And I worked in marketing for a few years until I had my first child. And when I was on maternity leave, I was scrambling around thinking of doing something. I had been very busy up until that point, and I thought, oh, I don't want my brains rusting while I'm on mat leave, with being with a little baby and all 16, 24 hours a day. So I thought, okay, what can I do? And I decided to do a couple of freelance writing courses from the Australian Writers Centre, because I had always been a writer. I'd been writing for pleasure and I'd always wanted to see my byline in an Australian magazine. So I started off as a writing and pitching while I was on mat leave, and I was on leave for about 2 years. And then I just decided not to go back to work because, you know, there was a distinct lack of flexibility, and I knew that taking time off with when my baby was sick would have been a problem, and I didn't want to put him into daycare for 40 hours a week, and that was what it was coming to. By the time I sat down and I did the calculations, basically I'd end up working for free the whole month, and I thought, you know what, I don't need that kind of stress. So I decided to pursue writing. So I did freelance feature writing for a couple of years, and then naturally fell into copywriting because I had been doing that as part of my marketing job anyway. And yeah, 12 years later, here we are. I'm a full-time copywriter by day and an indie author by night.
I love that. Have you published anything like, or more like sort of short stories, or what are you writing?
So I published my first full-length novel 2 years ago. It was called Life After Ali, and I've decided to write more like multicultural stories. So stories about multicultural characters in Australia doing regular stuff. So not having to, you know, overcome massive trauma and struggles and all that, but just regular people doing regular things. So I did that, and I'm currently thick in the middle of writing my second book. So what I'm trying to do with my author, with my novels, is actually tackle a lot of themes that I think people don't know that multicultural communities struggle with, and especially women. So that's what I'm trying to do.
Oh, brilliant. And that's what, I mean, you talked about at Kate Toon's conference, was you were really talking about diversity. And so where did, I mean, I kind of know where that topic, but like, why did you really choose to focus on that topic at the conference?
So as you know as well, over the last couple of years, especially, I think diversity and inclusion has become such a huge topic, right? Like it started with the Black Lives Matter movement. And as a community, we were talking about it in Kate's, you know, clever copywriting school. And I know that it's a topic that's quite close to Kate's heart as well. She's very open to feedback and, you know, taking on any suggestions that the writers have. But having seen the sort of the passion and, you know, the convictions around which people were talking about it, and knowing that Kate had also aligned herself with this, I then went ahead and filled out a speaker application and pitched that as a topic, because I felt that it, you know, was something important that we needed to talk about on a platform like CopyCon. And also because I know that it was something that Kate was passionate about. So that's why I think being a woman of color and coming from a multicultural background, and I think that made me, I felt quite a good fit to talk about that topic. So yeah, that's why I thought that that would be something good that Kate would be interested in.
Yeah, it's pretty nice seeing someone who actually, you know, kind of meets the description of diverse. Yeah. And you really do. Like, I loved one of your parts of your talk was you were saying, I'm going to say some phrases from the different languages that you speak. And I thought I was going to nail it, because the language you speak are from India, or Indian origin. And so I was like, I've got this one in the bag, but you really snuck them in. So and I think you did a trick one, because wasn't a trick one, but you said one of them was English, and we may not have picked up on that because we were so focused on the diversity that we weren't. And you don't even think of, I don't know, you don't think of yourself as being, you know, part of the diversity because we're here. So, but it is such an important topic, and I might take it for granted a little bit because I've traveled a lot. I've traveled extensively, and also from a very young age, I was exposed to many different cultures. My father works in freight forwarding, which is an international industry, and we were meeting guests from around the world when I was little. Like, I have Uncle Charlie in Thailand, and we had our friend Sarosh from India visiting when I was like five. So it was kind of second nature. And then when you, I guess, have been exposed to that, and I also did a contract working with World Vision. And so there we had to talk about all different cultures and write for different audience. Like, I mean, there are 92 countries around the world that they have offices in. So it's kind of in that, but not everybody has that understanding, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I think the understanding, I feel it might be a lot more ahead in maybe places like the UK and the States, I think, which have had that multicultural population for generations. But I think with Australia being such a young country and having only now joining the conversation and only now being exposed to the fact that, you know, diversity and inclusion does matter, to their population, because, well, the majority of the population is now multicultural, so it can't no longer be ignored. And I think that's where businesses as well need to start really thinking about who they're actually selling to, because they're no longer selling to one population. They're now selling to probably many communities speaking many languages with many different needs. And I think that needs to come across in their communication. And I think that's where I feel that I'm also making a difference, because I'm also working with women of color who are also trying to put into the right words what makes them special and bring in all their experiences to their business and how they convey their message to their audience.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the other thing that we have in Australia that is different to some other countries is our Indigenous Australians. Yes. And I didn't realize, I guess, again, working with World Vision, I'd worked very closely with the team who worked in that department, who did the programs. So I always was able to ask questions and have conversations kind of very easily. And then I was working on some copy for it, and the marketing department were like, oh, just do it like this one. And I was like, but we can't do it like that, because we don't speak about our, you know, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander population the way that you would speak about the Cambodian population. It's different. And they're like, you know, there's different complexities there. And I was like, I knew that there was a challenge with it. And I also had access to people who knew the answers, but I took it for granted that we all just know that. Well, not that I even know that, you know, but to ask the question or to get the information that was correct for that community.
Yeah. And it's also important to know what questions to ask, I think, because even if you look at the Indian community of which I'm a part, we are actually quite diverse, because one, we come from many different, so we all basically have at some point come from India, but like for me, my ancestors migrated to Africa in the 1920s, and I, despite being Indian, you know, speaking the language, cooking the food, watching the movies, you know, doing everything, I've never even been to India, you know, so
12 times
you've been 12 times, and I having ancestors roots there, I've never been.
Yeah.
And I like, what makes me distinct is very different from, say, a Malaysian Indian or an Indonesian Indian, a Singaporean Indian. So there are all these nuances in there that I think businesses can only realize if they have got people from those communities in the businesses talking to their audiences. Otherwise, I think it's very hard to know why would one Indian be very different from another Indian, for example.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think those nuances need to be understood, and the only way you can understand it is having people from those communities in your business, or at least talking to you.
Yeah, or going to the source, or going to find someone. And I think it's such a valid point, though, about the asking too. I think people are afraid to ask, or they just make an assumption, like it would be easy to look at you and to say, okay, you're Indian.
Yeah.
Whereas it's like you can ask the question. And sometimes I know it can be quite triggering as well to say, where are you from? Or like maybe it's what's your heritage, or what's your origin? Or just allow them to tell their story of, you know, people go, oh, but like, where are you really from? It's like, because we associate with different places, and totally different kettle, but I'm Australian, but my parents are English. So I feel very at home in England, you know, but then, you know, I've got this sort of like deep rooted history with the two places. But that's obviously not very obvious. But it's up to the, you know, it's up to people how they associate and their story and their history as to how they want to be communicated to as well.
Yeah. And I think what you said about assumptions is very important, that it's very, I think it's dangerous as a business or a brand to make those sorts of assumptions about your audience. And I think one of the points I mentioned, I think at CopyCon as well, was that as a business, you know, in a multicultural landscape, you have to really think about who's buying from you, you know, what their needs are, and also like sort of segment them in distinct groups so that you know, you don't like, you know, have the communities don't have a sort of like a crossover, or, you know, they're not sort of blurring into one another, because they're quite distinct in what they feel. And about asking the right questions as well, I definitely go to the source. You know, find somebody who knows somebody who can connect you with that person, because they are out there and they're very willing to help, because they want to be part of the conversation now.
Mm.
So, you know, it's easy to find somebody if you really need them.
Yeah.
And I mean, you can just, we could have an uncomfortable conversation, or we could just ask a question and see where it goes.
Yeah.
I've never been afraid to do that. And I think some people are so scared to even touch the topic when it's like, well, I'm trying to learn here. And I would like to ask I asked you before, how would you like your name to be said, before we came on? How do you say your name? I can make an assumption. I can try and read it, but I'd like to know how you would like it to be pronounced.
Yeah.
It's just a quick question and a conversation. But how do you find, you've got female, you're working with female-led businesses. Are they sort of B2C or are they B2B? Or like, are they sort of like you and I, like services working with individuals?
So they generally come from both product and service-based businesses. But at the moment, mostly they're coming from service-based businesses. So I'm working and have worked with both businesses led by women of color and also Australian women. It's a nice mix actually at the moment. So, but generally I find that my business tends to lean towards service-based business. And I think that's also because I think with messaging for service-based businesses is a little bit more trickier to nail than product-based business, because you don't have a physical something you can show the customer. So you have to really find the right words to articulate the value that you're bringing to the customer. And I think that's where a lot of service-led businesses fall down, because they're not able to tell the customer how they're going to transform their life through what their business.
Yes. And sometimes we are the service deliverer, or, we are a huge part of the business. And I don't know if you find it, but they don't want to talk about themselves. And it's like, but you're the service deliverer. Yeah. You're in many senses. And people, there was sort of this thing of going, oh, you're not the business. And it's like, no, I understand I'm a person first. But I've also come back around to, I am the business. I am the reason that people are coming to this business. They could go to anybody else. They're coming because of me and the skill sets and the service that I deliver. And so, learning how to communicate that.
It's interesting because I had my photos done recently, and the photographer and I developed a very good rapport, and she ended up becoming a client as well. And we were talking about, this Insta feeds and reels and all. And she said, I hate all those things. She said, I wish my work could just speak for itself and I wouldn't have to put myself out there. And she also hesitates a lot in putting her face, out there on reels and things like that, even though she's like fabulous at her job. And I could really empathize, because even when I started off as a freelance writer, like initially I was just sharing features and things like that. And then, I started being profiled and all of that. And I still, now I'm used to it. I do it without, hesitating. But at the beginning, I was like, okay, how is this going to come across? Do I want to be the face of my business? But as a solo service provider, you have to be. Unless, you've set up some sort of like a content agency type of model where you could get away with using your business brand. But then at some point, people still want to know who's behind the brand, because for them to do business with you, they need to like you and they need to trust you. And without seeing a human at the back of it, they're not going to do any of those things. But
people,
I think
work with people, right?
Yeah, they work with people at the end, because the founder is the one who's going to take the phone call. The founder is the one, and the staff are going to be sitting in on the meeting. It's not a faceless brand that's doing all the jobs. But yeah, it's definitely tricky. And I think it's also part of the conditioning many of us, women receive, that, just put your head down, just do the work, and don't try and toot your own horn so much, because it just doesn't, it's not ladylike to do all of those things. And I think that flows on into our businesses, where we then suddenly get told, oh, you have to put yourself out there. And they're like, no, I just want to do the work. I don't want anything else. But, it's no surprise that our website's about page is the second most viewed page on any website, because they want to know who is behind the business.
Yeah.
And if they cannot find a way to build that meaningful connection with you, then they're not likely to hit that inquiry button or book a meeting with you. Because if you're missing, the human element is missing, then it's very hard to then persuade people in this day and age of the personal brand to do business with you.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, I love that you said that about the about page, because it's something that I, really like fight for with my client, or including that even on the homepage. We don't want nameless, faceless businesses. And even product businesses, I challenge on this a lot. Like the service business, obviously, it is very much more prominent that they have to do that quicker. But even the product business, it's like the people, the businesses that we've seen do quite well are where the story of the why and the purpose of the founder comes through, that we're more connected to that brand. Because otherwise, there are hundreds or possibly thousands of other products that people could choose.
Mm.
And so your business can have a brand and a character, but that had to come from somewhere. And most likely, it came from you.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I think I think a lot of improvement to be made around how, you know, women-led businesses are sharing their personal stories. I think the why behind the business is what convinces the customer to buy from you. You know, why your business exists. I mean, they could, like you said, they could easily go out there and buy a different brand. You know, and for certain things, I don't think the story matters as much, but I think if it's more of an emotional buy, I think the story can really tip the person over into doing business with you and buying from you. But yeah, equally relevant for both service and product-based businesses. I think they're missing a huge opportunity if the about page is just generic content.
Yeah. And I love what you said about the photographer, because I've often, over the years, I do collaborate with the photographer, because I think writers and photographers, or communication people and photographers, have a very nice, you know, they're the visual and where the words have that nice collaboration, and to see how they have that challenge. But also, yeah, you have gone through a sort of a rebrand, or a reemergence of your brand. And tell us about that. Like, what was that like doing that for yourself?
Okay, so one thing I'll tell you about copywriters, and you probably know this from experience as well, that we always think our website can be better than what it is. It's never a done thing. It's never something that I've ticked off and said, okay, fine, you know, I'm just gonna do this and leave it. But then this time around, I said, no, I really need to get to a point where I am doing a rebrand, and I just want to do it well. And then, you know, just leave it so that it works for me. And so the rebrand process, I found a very good female-led web agency, and I really liked their work. So I went with them. And as for writing my own copy, my goodness, I was in a world of pain. writing my own copy, because it's just, you know, too close to your business. Can't see the wood from the trees, that sort of thing. But I really, I think, took my time this time to really nail down. And because I have a good niche now, I really wanted to get to the heart of why, you know, female-led businesses would hire a copywriter. I also did 3 customer interviews with my own clients about why they, you know, what they were struggling with, why did they know they needed a copywriter, why did they come to me. So all 3 of them gave various reasons about, you know, how they found me. But the biggest theme that came out of that was they felt that I was approachable, and because I was a fellow female-led business, they wanted to support me over anyone else.
Yeah.
So with my rebrand, what I've tried to do is reflect as much of the customer's language in my copy as possible, which is what I do for clients anyway. But I tell you, when you're trying to do it for yourself, yeah, it's not as easy as it sounds. Like, I've been struggling with it for a while, but I finally have done it. And I just wanted to, I think, sort of refresh my brand. I felt it had become a bit outdated. And because I'm also doing a couple of different things as well, I just wanted to have it all in one place and then just do it and leave it. So hopefully then it keeps working for my business down the line. I never have to do this again.
Until a few time where you want to talk, yeah, to people. It's this great process to go through, isn't it? Because, you know, I know we're working with people on this stuff and telling them they need to share their story and put themselves forward and promote themselves and, you know, share that information. And then you have to go through that process yourself. It's not always easy to do that work alone. So having someone to guide you, and you're generally the guide.
Yes.
And when the tables are turned, yeah, I always share with my clients that it's not, you know, I'm not sitting here going, you should do this and you should do that, because I know how difficult it is. I just kind of, I guess, have the templates or I know the structure needed in order to put it in, but trying to pull that information out is as challenging as they have it, except they have me to help.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think what I have to keep reminding myself about my website copy was that it is a work in progress. So in the sense that it does reflect my business at this particular time. but I don't know whether it will still be relevant 5 years down the line. So all you can do is capture it as best as possible at this point in time and then see how it works out for you in the future. Because businesses evolve, you know, your service offerings change, you change, you find out what you enjoy, what you don't want to do, and your website does evolve with that. So yeah, that's why I went through it. I just felt I needed a refresh and I needed better photos than some that were 5 years old, 6 years old now, I think. So
yeah, you know, the thing that I say as well is it's not just about the literal look of how you look and the literal words of what you say, because the words might be quite similar in some senses. It's the energy and the vibe of where you're at, and your energy from now to 5 years ago is completely different, and your vision of where you see your life, but literally where your life stage could be is I know for me 5 years, it's extremely different to what it was, but it's like that those photos can convey energy than to demonstrate, oh, this is that person. And like you said about that trust, like that trust could be built so quickly when that website reflects you and the you that you want people to see. And then you're going to get the audience that you want to attract. You know, otherwise people are so often, I mean, you probably hear it too, they're like, oh, I keep working with these people, I don't want to work with those people. Yeah. Why do these people keep coming to me? And it's like, because that's what you're saying
on the site. Yeah,
that's what you're showing them. Or you actually haven't defined who you want to work with or how you want to work, so then they're just coming because you're open to it. Whereas I really love on a website, I don't know about you, in some shape or form, like kind of this is for you if, or this is not for you, or if you want this, I'm for you. I really love that, because if you don't meet that criteria, you can disqualify yourself and it's fine. And then as the person who's the business owner, I would love you to decide I'm not for you. I think that's fine, because then the people who are for me and see themselves in that, they're going to come.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely, I think that the conversion of you know, your customers is based on how closely they see themselves in what you're telling them. And that's, I think, the tricky part in trying to define exactly who you're talking to, which is, you know, very, very crucial to get right in your messaging. So definitely, I think it is a good tactic to repel certain customers, just so, because it's just, you know, otherwise it's wasted time, energy, resources. And then you work with them and then realize, oh no, actually, they're not really who I want to work with. So it's better to have a better, like a clearer picture, and in terms of your messaging and who you really want to work with, so that the right people come to you naturally, you know, and the wrong people just go find some other person to work with that's right for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, you're making me really think, which I love, on my audience, you know, and in terms of that diversity element, because it's really interesting. I do notice that my life audience is very diverse, very diverse. But even when I started my travel podcast, so I have a travel podcast as well as this, I think we got up to like episode 9 and I looked at it and there was really a very minimal diversity. And the pipeline was for all these amazing countries around the world, places and people I knew from around the world, from all different backgrounds. But those first 8 or 9 episodes didn't reflect that. And I was like, that's not where I want to go, and that's not me. And I think where in my work at the moment, I think that some of the clients I work with in terms of the organizations have obviously world vision and things like that, but yeah, some of the individual clients I work with, there's probably not as much. Is there anything, you know, is that people are kind of looking to diversify and to attract and want to work with a wider range of, and I think we're speaking more culturally at the moment in terms of the diversity inclusion conversation. Is there anything that they can do to kind of bring that in? I think that's a huge question, but if there's something that they could.
Yeah, look, I think from my own experience as well, I've found that diversity on LinkedIn. I feel that is a place where, you know, you find a lot of people doing some amazing things, and all you got to do is, you know, either ask for recommendations or actually follow them. I think those two things, I feel that will give you access to that sort of diversity. I honestly can't see that level of diversity on any other social media platform for now. But I think LinkedIn is a place to be if you are looking for that, you know, if you're looking for more diverse audience, want to engage with them. And there's lots of, you know, women of color that I know in Australia who are doing wonderful things, and they're showcasing it on LinkedIn. So I think if you want to be somewhere, to access that sort of audience. And I think LinkedIn is the place to be. Certainly I go there to find whoever I need to find.
Yeah. And you're brilliant. You're very active on there and share wonderful content. So I absolutely recommend following Rashida there. But that's a really nice tip, is to be in those, you know, and that's an online place, because sometimes we might not know where to physically go. And I'm physically, it's funny because I feel like I'm physically going to the places, yes, to university, but maybe I'm being quite hard on my sort of audience, reflecting upon the individual clients that I work with. And, you know, yeah, it's really interesting when you take that step back and just have a look. And I think that's a nice thing to say, that you can change that, because I think sometimes we lean on and you go, well, yeah, I'm Australian and I'm white and my parents are English, so of course my community is more Anglo-Saxon. But that's not true, because, you know, as I said, I've also had a lot of exposure. I went to I think my high school was quite diverse, and so that's just not true. So then how can I just make myself more open to that?
Yeah. And I think if any of your audience are, you know, working in corporate and whatever, like nowadays, I think there is a fair bit more diversity than even when I was in the workplace. So I think just even connecting with your colleagues and somebody who you have a good comfort level with, in the sense that you can ask them a lot of things and they won't feel offended. So if you want to find out more, then you can definitely, I think, ask them. A lot of us, I think we're very keen to share our stories, because we come from communities that value storytelling a lot. You know, we grew up hearing our grandparents tell us lots of stories. Certainly mine did when I was younger. So stories is something that I think diverse communities are very good at sharing. And I think they would really appreciate it if you showed a keen interest and wanted to, you know, listen to their stories or their experiences or anything like that. So I think definitely LinkedIn is a great place, and just tapping into your own workplace network might be a great place to start developing, you know, a level of understanding.
Yes. Oh, you know, when I was doing one contract, we actually started to have like lunches where we would have people from, they would bring in their kind of home country food. We were having these really nice lunches, like food, I think also clothing. I mean, I think I ran over to you. I'm like a magpie with shiny things when it comes to very beautiful Alvar Kamis. And so I'll be attracted to that and have a conversation. So maybe it's finding something that you can start a conversation about, or ask the question, what is that garment called? Or what is that dish that, you know, and then maybe that leads to something more.
Definitely. Yeah. I think anytime anyone is showing a genuine interest, I think the other person can sense it. And so then there is less chance of them being offended by it. I think it just all comes down to your tone and your intention. And I think human beings generally sense that fairly succinct, like fairly accurately, what the other person is trying to. Are they trying to be deliberately offensive, or are they genuinely interested? I think that will definitely come across if the intention is right.
Well, thank you so much for sharing today and for your openness and opening this conversation. I really thoroughly enjoyed your talk. And as I said, I really love what you're sharing on LinkedIn and giving me some wonderful things to think about and some steps to take today. But how do we get in contact with you apart from LinkedIn?
Okay, so my website, which hopefully the new one will go live before the end of the financial year, is rashidatayabali.com.au. And I'm also on Instagram under Rashida Tayabali Writer, and same handle for LinkedIn.
Perfect. We'll put them in the show notes as well. But I so appreciate you coming on today and sharing your wisdom. Thank you, Rashida.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Emma. It was really lovely to meet you in real life, because I'd been following you around online as well for a while. So it was nice to, you know, catch up in real life. And I'm really glad that you enjoyed my talk. And I hope we get to chat many, many more times after this.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you for joining me today for another episode of Live and Love Your Brand. I'm so grateful that you've shared your time by listening today. That means so much to me. And if you're loving what you're learning, I would be so appreciative if you'd leave a review, rate this podcast, and subscribe. It really shows me that you care, but it also helps other listeners to find us too. Again, please be sure to connect with me. I love hearing from you and getting to know your story. You can connect with me on Instagram at @lovelycomms, Facebook, Lovely Communications, and please do join the gorgeous community, Live and Love Your Brand, our Facebook group. Or if you're ready to take action now and want to improve how you show up in the world with your brand, then head on over to lovelycommunications.com. Again, lovely is L-O-V-E-L-L-Y, communications.com, to learn how you can work with me. My clients have gone on to experience opportunities that they could never have dreamed of. From starting businesses to taking leadership in their own life, they have found the confidence to stand in who they are and to go wholeheartedly after what they truly want in life. And I want that for you too. If you're ready to invest in yourself and reconnect with who you are, then let's chat. Thank you again for listening. Now go into the world and share the beauty that is the uniqueness of you. Catch you next week, lovely.